The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, September 15th, 2025.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. With me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine.
Looks like we're going to have a warm day here in Sonoma County.
We'll get to 91 in Santa Rosa.
Oh, for heaven's sake. You know, Ken, I have a very, very special guest joining me today on the phone all the way from the East is Kim Vallenumam, a lifetime feminist activist and the newly elected president of the National Organization for Women. I'm really excited about having Kim on the show. You know, right now with so many things going on, particularly around women, it is very, very important that we support this organization. You know, now is one of the first and the second wave of feminism, one of the first organizations. The National Organization for Women is the largest organization of feminist grassroots activists in the United States. Now has hundreds of chapters and hundreds of thousands of members and activists in all 50 states and also the District of Columbia. Since their founding in 1966, NOW's purpose is to take action through intersectional grassroots activism to promote feminist ideals, lead social change, eliminate discrimination, and achieve and protect the equal rights of all women and girls in all aspects of social, political, and economic life. And it's been an organization for almost 60 years now. It's just amazing that it's been able to last this long. And I really want to encourage folks to go on their website. It's the National Organization for Women.org and join, become a member. It's very, very important. It's now.org. I'm sorry about that. Now.org and become a member. I mean, they have a new president, a new vice president, and they're really working on many, many very interesting projects for women. And I really want to encourage people to look into NOW and join. Just become a member, just to support the organization. It's very, very important. Well, I have a shout out to do before I do any announcements. As you know, I announced several times that on September 11, 2025, there was this Commission on the Status of Women, the Sonoma County chapter, hosted a webinar and also a gathering, they had different women on. It was like kind of a presentation of different immigrant women, some of them who were documented, some of them are not documented, some of them all kinds of different stories. And I really thought it was a very, very interesting presentation. I want to do a shout out to Joni Brown of the Commission on the Status of Women for keeping me abreast of what was going on, and to actually, she was on our show over the radio talking about this very important presentation. And I just want to do a shout out for them. And I really believe that the presentation really in my heart kind of opened my heart to really understand what these women are going through and how frightened they are about being picked up or losing their children, having their children taken away from them. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me, folks, that this is happening. I mean, it's just amazing to me. I get up in the morning sometimes and listen to the news, and I say to myself, is this really real? Is this really happening? But it is happening, and these women that were on the panel really let us know how they feel, and I think it was really very, very, very interesting. And I have a special announcement to make here that the National Women's History Alliance is going to be having a webinar on Monday, September 22nd. Join the National Women's History Alliance as we celebrate the women who have shaped both our workplaces, classrooms, and from union leaders who organized strikes to teachers who sparked movements. Women, we've been long time at the center of labor and education justice. And I think it'll be very, very, very interesting. All you have to do is go on to the NationalWomen'sHistoryAlliance.org and find out all the information. You'll get all how to get on the webinar, all the codes and everything. And together, here's what they say here. Together, they're going to explore the powerful history of the women's labor organizing and union leadership, the role of educators building equitable and inclusive learning spaces, and the legacy and future of Title VI and its impact on gender equality in education. And you know something that's very, very interesting when I think about Title VI, I remember when I was going to Sonoma State, this was very, very interesting. A letter came in that a young woman wanted to play football. Now, I was not in favor of women playing football, but this young woman wanted to play football, and she was not allowed to. And that's when the move to make sure that Title VI included all genders be allowed to play all sports. And that's how that happened. And so I think it's very interesting that the National Women's History Alliance is doing these seminars, and this one is very important, Women in Labor and Education. So I really want to encourage people to go ahead and find out about that and make sure that you attend, because you know that's what we need. Knowledge is power. The more you know, the more you think about things, the more you react in a way that makes more sense. I mean, there's so much lying go around lately that I just wonder when are we going to get some truth going here? Well, I have another announcement. The Sonoma County is going to be presenting a program called Meet Your Street. I think that's very interesting. I'm not really clear how that is, but what they're trying to do, I guess, is get neighbors out of the house and meet each other. And so if you want more information about that, a woman by the name of Nancy Brown, who works for the Sonoma County, is handling this. Here's her phone number, 707-396-4033. That's 707-396-4033. And you can find out more about this program, Meet in Your Street. It's going to be happening the weekend of October 3rd to 5th, and it's a countrywide opportunity to meet your street. So if you'd like to participate, pick a date and time to host your neighborhood event. And like I said, Nancy Brown at Sonoma County is handling this, and her telephone number is 707-396-4033. It's an opportunity to meet your neighbor. I mean, how many people know their neighbors? I mean, I feel very blessed. We live in like a little cul-de-sac, and we know everybody. And it's very, very reassuring when you know your neighbors. It really is. So remember, that's Nancy Brown at 707-396-4033. And I'm sure she'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have. And also, they're saying that you can be one of the organizers. In fact, you know, that's kind of interesting, Ken, when I think about it. We have a wonderful street, and I've been wanting to do this for a long time. So I'm going to definitely find out how we can do it and how we can organize it and get to know more of our neighbors. A suggestion I have, one of the things that Ken and I do, we walk every day. And when you walk, it's amazing how you meet people. You can begin to find out people's stories because someone's out in the front porch sitting there. You can talk to them. Maybe someone's working in their front garden. You can talk to them, or just meeting all the other people that walk during the time that we walk. It's really very productive. Not only is it good for your body, but it's good socially to meet the people that live around you. I mean, that's very important. Let me tell you, especially in today's world. I mean, it's getting rough out there. You know, and another thing, I want to do a condolences. You know, a gentleman by the name of Charlie Kirk was actually assassinated by a young person of 22 or 23 years old that was radicalized. And he was shot, and it was a very, very sad thing. You know, he was a very interesting man. I did not agree at all with his concept or his ideology. But one thing I do not agree with, and that the fact that he was killed in the way he was. I mean, the violence in this country is just getting out of hand, and we have to kind of get control of it. And it's an individual thing. You know, we have to watch, we have to listen and watch and pay attention. Pay attention to what people are listening to and talk to each other. Don't be afraid to listen to each other's opinions. You know, if someone talks to you and you feel a negative feeling, ask them, say, you know, what motivates you? Why do you believe that way? It doesn't that sound ugly to you or something, you know, but have conversations with one another. We're so isolated, you know, that we go into our little community. I see all these people with their iPhones, you know, they're constantly staring in and talking into it. Ken himself does that. You know, and I think to myself, is this what our culture is coming to? That we don't look at each other, we just look at our phones. So it's something to really pay attention to. And I'm sorry, the gentleman had two children. He was married. I mean, what it does to a community when something like this happens, it's a heartbreaker. You know, we live in the United States of America. We're a free country. We have a constitution that guarantees us certain rights. You know, and to go around murdering each other or assassinating each other, it just makes me feel, it's scary. You know, I'm waiting now for my third great-grandchild to be born. Little James, you know, James Richard's going to be born any day now. And I'm thinking, what kind of world is he coming into when something like this happens? Mm-hmm. So there's lots to think about it. You know, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. That's very important. Blessed are the peacemakers. Not the war makers, the peacemakers. And when someone is assassinated, you almost want to go to war over it. So it's very important to love one another, to respect one another, to get educated, to understand what's going on, and not to be afraid to debate each other. You don't have to agree with each other, but find out, why is that person thinking that way? Maybe if you talk to them, maybe you can help change their thinking. Maybe they can educate you a little bit. You know, dialogue is a back and forth thing. You know, when I say these things and I even think about what I'm talking to, it just creates a level of sadness in me. You know, this is my country. I love it. People are talking about, you know, we're going to go revenge and all this other stuff. Why revenge? Why not education? Why not understanding what was inside that person's head that they felt that they had to pick up a gun and go assassinate somebody? I mean, think about that. That is a terrible thing. And that person that did that, I don't care what anybody says, is suffering. It's suffering. There's something that's missing. Maybe they're not being listened to. Maybe they don't feel a part of. You know, we need to pay attention to each other, especially during these times. Well, like we do at every Monday morning, we do our segment called Our History is Our Strength. And why do I do it? I'll repeat it again and again. We need to know whose shoulders we are standing on. When I read what some of these women have done and the risk that they have taken, it gives me more and more confidence than I could ever, ever express to anybody. So here we go. Our history is our strength. Today is the 15th, but this was happened on September 14th, 1917, and she made her transition in 1994. That's Joyce Chen. She was a cookbook author. She immigrated to Massachusetts from China in 1944. She opened an authentic North Chinese restaurant in 1958 with immediate success. She taught, published the Joyce Chen Cookbook, and hosted the television program Joyce Chen Cooks. I mean, that is so amazing. You know, here she comes from China. Imagine that. Probably doesn't even know the language. And all of a sudden now she's writing a cookbook and she gets on the radio or television and starts sharing all these different ways to make Chinese food. So happy birthday to Joyce Chen. And then I have another announcement to make here, another very interesting woman that I did not even know about. She was born September 16th, 1913, and she made her transition in 1995, and that's Florence Greenberg. She founded Scepter Records. She produced several rock and roll and soul records in the 1950s to the 1970s, and she had a company called Wand Records, a label that promoted, of all people, Diane Warwick in 1960. I mean, it was very unusual for women to be record producers. So she, Florence Ginsburg, founded Scepter Records, and for, she had $4,000 she received when she sold her first record company. And then she got the, she promoted a group called the Shirelles. And then when the Shirelles didn't produce any hits for Decca, it was very interesting. They were given back to Greenberg, who signed them on. And if people are familiar with rock and roll, the Shirelles were very, very, very popular. So this was amazing that a woman in the 60s actually did this. And then my last birthday is, well, actually there's two more. September 18th, she was born September 18th, 1905, and she made her transition in 1990. And you know, it's very interesting. That's Greta Garbo. She was an actress. She got her start in advertising in 1922. She moved to Hollywood in 1925. I remember, I'll never forget when I was a young girl, you know, when television came on, Camille was the movie with Robert Taylor, and it was on television, and Robert Taylor was so handsome, and Greta Garbo was so beautiful, and to see this movie, it's on Netflix. If you ever get a chance, watch Camille. It's really a touching story, and it really gives a sense, really lets you know what it was like for women when they had no rights, how they managed to survive, how they sold themselves on so many levels. They had to almost sell their soul in order to survive. So happy birthday to Greta Garbo. And what was so interesting about her, I just watched a bio. She retired at the height of her success. She retired. She says, that's it. I'm finished. I have enough money. I don't want to do this anymore. And she became a philanthropist. So happy birthday. She was one of my favorite actresses. And the last ones, of course, I always do a shout out. She was born on September 20th, 1899 and made her a transition in 1979. And that's Anna Strauss. She was the League of Women Voters National President from 1944 to 1950. She believed in simplicity and consensus building. Truman named her to the Commission of Internal Security and Individual Rights in 1951. Amazing woman. And a shout out to the League of Women Voters. They're doing a lot trying to educate people about voting. So watch on Facebook. You can go to their Facebook page and you can see all the different events that they're sponsoring. Well, that's a lot. That's a lot to chew on. And we're going to take a musical break now, and we're going to get on with, I'm going to be playing a song. Well, actually, it's a poem called Dark Testament. Dark Testament was published in Polly Murray's only book of poetry, Dark Testament and other poems in 1970. And the reason that I'm featuring Polly Murray is because she was one of the founders of the National Organization for Women. She actually wrote their mission statement at the beginning of their program. So let's go ahead and let's listen to it's called Dark Testament by Rashad and Courtney. And when we return, we will be talking by joining me by phone will be Kim Villanueva, a longtime feminist activist and the newly elected president for the National Organization for Women. So let's go ahead and play that, and let's get her on the phone, Ken.
Hope is a crushed stalk between clenched fingers. Hope is a bird's wing broken by a stone. Hope is a word in a tuneless ditty, a word whispered with the wind, a dream of 40 acres and a mule, a cabin of one's own and a moment to rest. A name and a place. place for one's children and children's children at last. Hope is a song in a weary throat. Give me a song of hope and a world where I can sing it. Give me a song of faith and a people to believe in it. Give me a song of kindliness and a country where I can live it. Give me a song of hope and love and a brown girl's heart to hear it. I sing of a new American, separate from all others, yet enlarged and diminished by all others. I am the child of kings and serfs, freemen and slaves, having neither superiors nor inferiors. Progeny of all colors, all cultures, all systems, all beliefs, I have been enslaved, yet my spirit is unbound. I have been cast aside, but I sparkle in the darkness. I have been slain, but live on in the rivers of history. I seek no conquest, no wealth, no power, no revenge. I seek only discovery of the illimitable heights and depths of my own being. Hope is a crushed stalk between clenched fingers. Hope is a bird's wing broken by a stone. Hope is a word in a tuneless ditty, a word whispered with the wind, a dream of 40 acres and a mule, a cabin of one's own and a moment to rest, a name and a place for one's children and children's children at last. Hope is a song in a weary throat.
Oh, I'll tell you, Polly Murray, what a poet, what a song, what a poet that is. It touches me when I think about the children, a place that's safe, you know. It's just an amazing thing. For you just joining, I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, and Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest. Joining me on the phone is Kim Villanueva. Welcome, Kim. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Elaine. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, I'm delighted to have you. You know, Kim is a lifelong feminist activist, and she's the newly elected president for the National Organization for Women. Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
How does that feel?
Well, I have been in office for 1 month, and I feel like I'm actually settling in now.
Well, it takes quite a bit, you know, it takes a lot of energy at the beginning, you know, just turning over the phone to everybody, if you know what I mean.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, you know, yes. Kim, I want to tell our folks just a little bit about you. Is that okay?
Of course.
Kim Villanueva is a lifelong feminist activist. She joined the National Organization for Women Now in 1987 to be part of something greater than herself. Over four decades, she has served in key leadership roles in Now, and including state president of Illinois, chair of the National Election Committee, and co-founder of Now's Asian American Pacific Islander Caucus. Boy, that's a lot. You know, beyond Now, Kim has led numerous civic organizations in Springfield, Illinois, including Central Illinois Gay and Lesbian. Hold on, let me go to the next page here. Lesbian Task Force, the Springfield YWCA, Area Arts Council, and the Abraham Lincoln Unitarian Universalist Congregation. Boy, that's a lot that you've had on your plate. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
Oh, no, I think that covers it. I love to volunteer, and I love to be a part of the community and to help the community.
Well, you know, NOW has been a long time organization. I mean, it's really interesting. I was watching, there's a film called Mrs. America, and it showed kind of the beginnings of NOW with Betty Friedan and all the different people that were involved. So I thought we would begin by, give us a little history of NOW, you know, and also what attracted you at the beginning. I mean, you've been involved for quite a while now. And who inspired you? Well, who were the women before that you were reading that you said, my God, she could do this, I could do it?
Well, of course, there's always Polly Murray, who you mentioned at the beginning, who was one of the founders of NOW. Gloria Steinem has always been an inspiration for me. You know, reading her books, seeing her discussions. I mean, she's always sort of my guiding star in terms of feminism. In terms of what attracted me to NOW, it's interesting because actually I think what attracted me to feminism was when I was 8. And I was in Sunday school. I was raised Catholic, and I volunteered to be an altar girl. But at the time, only boys were allowed to be altar boys. So I asked the teacher, I said, well, why? How come I can't be an altar girl? And she said, because that's the way it is. And I thought, that's not the way it should be. So I've always thought after that, I need to be doing something to make sure that, you know, things change for the better.
Well, that's amazing. Ken, partner Ken, who is my co-producer here, and he's the engineer, all of a sudden when you said you wanted to be an altar girl, he kind of laughed because he was an altar boy.
Oh, really?
So he understood, you know, how that was. I mean, it's amazing. Right. It's amazing how women have been trying to be pushed to the back of the bus as long as I can remember.
Exactly. Right,
well, you know,
right.
You know, that's very interesting that 8 years old, you know, that you had the inspiration and the tenacity to speak out. I mean, I applaud you for that. So
that goes
to our next question, and I'm sure that includes what you just shared with us. What parts of your background and experience are you most excited to bring to your new role as president of the National Organization for Women? And why do you think it's important that the organization is 60 years old, and
yes, next year.
Yeah, and why do you feel it's still a viable organization and people and women should participate and belong?
Well, unfortunately, women are still not, you know, equal partners in society or in government. So there is still a need for NOW and for us to be active, you know, advocating for women's equality. I think some of the characteristics and the experiences that I bring are that I come from the grassroots part of NOW. I started at the local chapter in Springfield, Illinois, you know, worked up to be at the state level and the national. So I understand what it's like to do something locally, you know, picketing your local Walmart because they don't carry T-shirts, you know, that say a girl can be president, or picketing outside of Hobby Lobby because they won't provide birth control for their employees. So I understand how if you do something locally, it can have an impact. So I'm trying to bring that perspective at the national level.
Well, what do you feel that women right now? I know I was president for 5 years here in Sonoma County, and it was very difficult to get participation. And how are you looking at that? How are you encouraging women to join? I mean, do you feel there's more women joining now since all the issues that have been happening, or what position is NOW in?
Well, we have to meet women where they are. I mean, some women love to go to rallies and protests, and some people are just not able to do that, you know, either because of time or, you know, physical issues. So we can say, you know, if you can go to a rally, that's great. Or if you want to stay home and write letters to your members of Congress, that's good too. I mean, every way, you know, however you can help, we want your activism. So that's what we're telling people when we talk with them, is that you don't have to be the leader of the parade. You know, we need people, you know, throwing candy and waving and making the signs, making the phone calls at home. I mean, everybody's talents are valued.
Well, you know, one of the things that I notice in our culture more than anything else, they have all this star value. You know, if you know, if you're a millionaire or you're a great singer or whatever it is, you have all this star value. And we lose sight of all the people that are behind the scenes doing all the work and, you know, organizing and bringing forward and going to the marches or contributing, you know. So we need to do a shout out for all the people that really participate. And I feel there's more participation today than there has been in a long time. So my question to you is, as far as an organization is, what do you believe some of the major challenges or threats that women have today, and the organization itself, what is it facing, and how are how are you involved to combating this and to educating people a little bit more?
Well, you know, actually, surprisingly, one of the major issues is just the overflow of issues that we have to face right now. I mean, the current administration just overloading with, you know, attacks on women's rights, attacks on economic justice. I mean, every time you turn, there's something that we have to respond to, you know, defunding of Planned Parenthood. So it's hard to know what to do first. So we just sort of have to take a step back and say, we can do this. So what we do is we just, you know, we try to respond as we can. You know, we're working on a legislative update about the Family Act, which would allow for paid family leave for people to take care of their children or their parents, you know, which is much needed in, you know, our country. Every other country seems to have it except the United States. So when we, you know, work on these issues, we try to inform our members on how they can become involved and why it's important for them to be involved. But some of the major issues, obviously, violence against women has always been a major, major issue. And we've seen that with the interest in the releasing of the Epstein files and providing support for Epstein survivors, just because violence against women is so prevalent in our society.
Well, you know, it's amazing to me. Mm-hmm. It was amazing, amazing when I was listening. I forgot who said this. Mm-hmm. I believe it was actually the young man that was assassinated as Charlie Kirk. Mm-hmm. I believe he was the one that said that. He believed that women should not have the right to vote.
Oh,
you know, and I heard that, my hair stood. I says, "What? How? I mean, even to say that sentence on the air, to me, I felt like I was being violated."
Right. And unfortunately, that seems to be a growing sentiment at the national level. Our defense secretary has said that, you know, that he believes that it should only be one vote per household, and that the male head of household should have that vote. There's legislation in Congress to require people who have changed their names to provide documentation to prove that. So, you know, if you're married or you're transgender or you have just changed your name, you have to go through these additional hoops or lose your right to vote. And those are scary things to think about, because you think about our foremothers, how they fought for the right to vote and the right to suffrage, and it could be taken away so quickly.
Well, also, when you look at Roe versus Wade, what happened, and to me, you know, having a woman's show, I mean, I have thought about this and thought about this, and I think what happened is we become complacent. You know, here we have the right, and we just take it for granted, and then suddenly, you know, you have all these forces that are trying to take it away, and you're not paying attention to it as hard as you should, and then all of a sudden, look what they did. So I think we have to really pay attention when they say they want to take our right to vote away, because they took our right to choice away.
Right, exactly.
And I never thought that would happen.
Did you ever? Oh, I know.
I never thought that would happen.
I know. You would think after 50 years that it would be a legal precedent, but it took, 5 months, and they took it away. I mean, so you know, we have to be on guard on what else they may take away, and we have to make sure we try to protect as much as we can.
That's why
we're pushing for the Equal Rights Amendment, so that women are finally in the Constitution.
Well, you know, it's so interesting about taking rights away and what happened. You know, you need to stand up. You need to pay attention. It's very, very important. You know, and they're trying right now. I think right now we're at the biggest test our country has ever had. I mean, in a way, it's exciting, even though it's scary. It's excited. It's exciting to be part of all this, because you say, which way is it going to go?
Right.
How are we going to get out of this one? It reminds me of when I was a young girl, we used to go to the movies. You know, you had the regular movie, then you had the newsreel, and then you had a little a little thing called Perils of Pauline.
Oh.
I don't know if you ever remember that, but she would be on a railroad track, and somehow she got rescued. Uh-huh. Well, that's how I feel. I feel that right now we're at that point where we're kind of trying to move forward, and at the same time, it's very scary. Well, here's an exciting question, and I really love this question, and I really thank you for being on the show, and I, again, congratulations. As president, what are your top priorities for the first 100 days in office, and how will that be enacted? And I want to add something in that I thought was brilliant. When you first started take office, you send out a thing, an announcement about that you wanted people to pay attention. It was called Code of Conduct.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a brilliant piece because in organizations, I've seen the way, you know, even in the most progressive organizations, you see somewhat a little bit of abuse of people, and that we have to be aware of how we communicate to each other. So if you could address that within with the president, what are your top three priorities?
Oh, sure. Well, that is one of my top three priorities, is to sort of encourage communication at all levels, you know, from the grassroots at the local level to state leaders and then to the national, because there has been a lack of that, I think. I think we see that in any organization where the top leadership sometimes forget that they are responsible to their membership. So we want to make sure that we know that the membership is heard and valued. And we did send out a code of conduct because we wanted our members to know that we were going to listen to them, but we also expected them, you know, to listen to others. I'm a big fan of Loretta Ross, you know, and her philosophy of calling in instead of calling people out. And that's where you talk with somebody so that you can learn, you know, why do they believe what they do? And sometimes you may not always be able to change their mind, but you may learn something about them. And that sort of just moves the conversation instead of, you know, the vitriol that we see in society right now. And so some of the other things that we're going to work on in our first 100 days, we have a committee structure. And in the past, it's been basically appointed by the president, but we're going to open it up to members. You know, and state leaders, that if you're interested in serving on a national committee, you know, we're certainly willing to, you know, what your credentials are and how you can contribute.
What would be the names of one or two of the committees?
Oh, they're sort of wonky. I mean, budget and finance, structure and processes, you know, looking at the organization's governance and bylaws. But then we also have issue committees based on our six core issues of the Equal Rights Amendment, economic justice, lesbian and gay rights, violence against women, racial justice. So, I mean, we have more of the structural committees, but then more issue policy-based committees. So if somebody has an interest in a certain area, you know, we would love to have them join that committee.
Well, I think they're very important. It's very important that these committees come to be.
Right, and it's nice to have different perspectives, too, because somebody, you know, in Texas will have a different perspective than somebody based in New Jersey. So we want to have that mindset, that fresh eyes and fresh ears that we can listen to.
What do you think is the hardest part of your job, and what kind of support would you like to have as you move forward from, say, the membership? Like, you're opening, I think that's great, you're opening it up that they can be part of committees, but, you know, what is it like for you as president, all of a sudden stepping into all this stuff?
Right. I think, well, just the learning curve of learning, you know, what should I prioritize? Is it the financials, you know, paying the bills, you know, looking through the, or is it strategizing on legislation? It's sort of hour by hour, I think my tasks change. So it's learning to be multitasking and very flexible in what I do.
What keeps you centered? I mean, you know, all of a sudden something happens. What keeps you centered?
Oh, I think the fact that I'm helping somewhere, somehow, I'm helping to advance women and women's equality.
Well, I think that's a very important point. What really gets you is, as long as you're involved, it helps you to have courage and to speak out.
Absolutely, yes. You may remember a songwriter, Kristen Lems.
Yes.
Yes, and her song, "We Will Never Give In, We Will Never Give Up Until Justice Is Ours."
Right.
And that's, so I use that, "Until Justice Is Ours," is my signature on emails.
Well, that, I mean, what a great attitude to move into it. So, mm-hmm. Kim, we're going to take a little musical break now. Is that okay? And then we'll come back.
Yes,
we're going to finish the discussion, talking a little bit more about now and some of the things that you're involved with. And the song I'm going to play, it's called "The Ones Who Have Gone Before Us," sung by Bev Grant. And when we return, I will continue this wonderful interview with the new president of the National Organization for Women, Kim. Kim, pronounce your name for me. Your last
Villanueva.
Name.
Villanueva.
Kim Villanueva. And she's a lifetime feminist and activist and newly elected president for the organization. So let's go ahead, Ken. Let's play that. And then when we come back, we will continue our conversation.
Situation calls for something new. There are times we cannot see what's just ahead, but still we know there is a life to be led, a path to follow.
Standing on the shoulders of some pretty strong women. You know, I want to let you know, two of my heroes are Ida B. Wells. She was an African-American activist, mm-hmm. and Pauli Murray, who was one of the founders of the National Women's organization for women. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I am your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And I'll tell you, you know, I'm a little shaky right now because, in a way, my mind is on. I'm expecting my third great grandchild any day.
Congratulations!
You know, and my granddaughter lives in San Diego. My daughter's, you know, already packed, ready to go down. And is, so my mind is like in two places. So I want to say hello to Katie. I know she's listening today. That's my granddaughter. Well, you know, it's really interesting. I am just such a supporter of NOW. And what I would like to know, in your mind, what is an issue that women are currently facing that isn't getting enough attention? And why is it important? And how will that play into your work as a president?
Well, I think we talked a little bit about the SAVE Act, which is the act that would disenfranchise women and deny them the right to vote if it passes. You know, it's basically, if you change your name because of marriage or divorce, you have to provide the documentation, and that could be prohibitive for some women who can't afford to go to the courthouse and get those papers. So we're trying to let women know, you know, that this is the type of legislation we're seeing at the federal level that is very draconian for women.
What was the name of that you said, that act?
It was the SAVE Act.
And what is that about? Go a little bit deeper into that.
Yeah, it was just requiring that if someone changes their name, they need to provide, you know, court documents showing why they changed their name.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, like, for example, I changed my maiden name was Pine. And
your maiden name was Holtz.
Rather, my married name was Pine, and my maiden name is Holtz, and I changed it back to Holtz maybe 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Would I have to prove, or I don't have to prove?
Yes, you would. Uh-huh. Right. I think you would. So depending on how it's, you know, they finally implement it, but it's something we're calling attention to, because it's just one of those ways that it may sound, well, it's, you know, they're trying to weed out the alleged voter integrity issues that never really occurred, that they're claiming that this will be a way to prove that people who are citizens are able to vote, but it's just ways to weed out.
Well, what about if you have your real ID?
You know, I'm not sure if that would count or not, because it wouldn't show how your name changed.
It's so interesting. I mean, I didn't realize, because when I first heard it, I thought, wait a minute, I changed my name back. I came from Pine, I went back to Holtz.
Right.
And
your name matches a birth certificate.
Yeah, it doesn't match. Well, I don't know. It's kind of an interesting thought if how they could work it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I guess if your current name matches your birth certificate, you would be fine, but you know, if you had not changed your name, then there might be issues.
So would a woman have to bring her birth certificate with her driver's license?
Right, yes. Uh-huh.
Well, that's kind of interesting.
Right. I was born in Minnesota, so I would have to go contact the state of Minnesota to get a copy of my birth certificate. If I didn't know how to do that, I think it would be difficult for someone who didn't know how to do that or wasn't able to pay for the fees.
Yeah, I mean, why are they doing that?
Well, it's, as I said, it's supposedly to prevent non-citizens from voting, because if you're a non-citizen, you won't have the papers to show that you're, you know, documented and that your name is the correct name.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because every time they do any kind of surveys or they do any kind of looking into, they find maybe five or six through the whole country.
Right, exactly. Right.
Uh-huh. That is really interesting. Well, how do you combat something like that?
Yeah, just through education. I mean, you know, for just talking with you about it right now, most, as you said, most people aren't aware that this is the type of legislation that's out there. So we're just call attention to it, say, here's the impact, this is how it could affect you, and this is what you need to do, is contact your member of Congress and say, this is a silly law, but don't vote for it.
Oh, so it has not been voted on yet?
No, it's in the U.S. Senate right now. So people need to, you're in California, your senators would not vote for it, but in other areas, there are some senators who might think it's a good idea. And so we're encouraging our NOW members to talk to their senators and ask them to vote no on it.
Well, you know, you've been an activist for a long, long time.
Yes.
You know, you've been in many different organizations. What do you think, on a personal level, what do you think it is right now, particularly with women? I mean, I could not believe that I watched this conversation on Facebook with a woman and her husband. You know, they were definitely I would say, to the right persuasion. And when they asked her how she would feel about not being able to vote, she says, "Well, it's okay because my husband is voting for me."
How is that?
How did that come into the mainstream again? I mean, it seems to me that I just don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What is your thought?
Yeah, it is interesting when you wonder how can somebody feel that they don't have the power or the, you know, the empowerment to make their own decisions. But I guess if you've been, you know, brought up that way, or you believe it through whatever, you know, cultural influences you've had. I mean, it's sad to hear that, though, isn't that? That somebody doesn't feel that they, you know, have the ability to make their own decisions, and then it has to be made by somebody else.
But also that women have had the vote for over 100 years.
Oh, and I
that,
know.
You know, and that and what we went through. You know, it's the same thing around the abortion issue. What I never understand is why people, you know, when you have a book on the law, or you have a law on the books that gives you the right to do something, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to.
Exactly, right.
You know, if your religion says that this is not right, fine. But what is it in your travels that you have found? What is it that makes people take this stand like that?
I don't know if it's just, as I said, their background, you know, religious beliefs or the way they were raised in their families. It's I don't know, lack of education, lack of exposure to the wider world. You know, if you live in a very narrow view of the world and, you know, women only play a small role in it, then you don't really see beyond that. I find it very sad, though, because if you look in other cultures, you know, we were talking about getting back to voting, where I remember, I think it was Time magazine had a cover photo of a woman from Iran when women were allowed to vote. And they would, after you voted, they would use purple ink on their fingers to show they had voted. And it had a cover of this woman holding up her finger with a purple ink on her finger showing she had voted and how proud she was. You know, and we don't see that in our country, that people don't seem to be proud to vote.
Well, it seems more like a burden. And you know, it's so interesting. Mm-hmm. The best thing I think that ever happened was when they brought mail-in voting to the
oh,
table.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Because I know, like, Ken and I will sit down at the table. We bring out the ballot. We bring out all the different flyers we've gotten. You know, we've already read a few articles, and it takes us about a half hour, and we are able to talk back and forth. How do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? Then check it on the computer, and it actually is fun in a way, because you feel like you're participating in your democracy.
Right. I love that you're an informed voter.
Well, it's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you know, one of the things, being a great-grandmother, when I think about it, you know, in the Native American cultures, the great-grandmothers would be on the war council, you know, and I would say no more war. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
But when you start thinking about it, and you start thinking about women, you know, here we are the ones who give birth. Whether we want to have children or not, it's irrelevant. We are. If you believe in a creator or creation, you know, like a flower has a seed, you know, every flower comes a certain way. A woman has the, you know, she has that potential. And I just really don't understand why women do not understand more of really the power that they have, like the hand that rocks the cradle. So I think there's a lot to talk about. Well, we've come to this very delightful end of this very delightful conversation with you. And I'm really so excited about your new presidency. And I really want to wish you luck and any support that we can give you, any announcements that you need or anything. You want to be in the air anytime, you just give me a call.
Thank you. Oh, wonderful. Yeah, we'll take you up on that.
Oh, I hope you do. I mean, this is a woman's show. I mean, this is devoted to every ordinary woman doing extraordinary things. And it's important that we know about each other. So,
absolutely, yes.
This is our last words. How can people get involved with NOW? How can they share and the website and anything else that you'd like to say?
Okay. Sure. Well, NOW, as I said before, NOW is a member-based organization. We are grassroots-based. So if you are out there in a little community, you can still be a part of NOW. And our website is now.org. You can join for just $10. And we're also on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. So just check us out. Just look for NOW, and, you know, we will be there. The sisterhood is everywhere.
As a last word, Kim, what would you say to the women out there? How can they quiet their fear about maybe standing up? What are some ideas that you have, real quick?
Well, I think one thing is that you're not alone. There are other women out here who feel the way you do, and we are trying to work together to promote women's issues and to, you know, we're working for this for our daughters and granddaughters. I have a granddaughter, I have three grandsons, and I'm doing this work for them as well. So I think we just need to keep in mind we have to be in this for the long haul. It's not going to take overnight. And, you know, Alice Paul didn't achieve things overnight. Shirley Chisholm, you know, ran for president and lost, but still was in the good fight. So we just need to keep working together and keep staying positive and knowing that, you know, we will prevail.
Well, thank you so much, Kim Villanueva, for such a wonderful interview. And also, again, congratulations, the new president of the National Organization for Women. Thank you so much for being on Women's Spaces.
Okay, well, thank you, Elaine. Thank you, Ken.
You're welcome.
All right.
Well, that's it for our show, folks. I mean, it's been a wonderful show. I mean, I'm really excited about this, the new president. And, you know, she really is very impressive to me. And so was the last one. I mean, NOW as an organization is long and has been here for a while. And I really encourage folks to join. And to remind you, if you go on Facebook and look up Sonoma County NOW, they have their meeting this evening on Zoom. Well, that's it for our show. A reminder, tell your friends Women's Spaces will be aired again at 11 p.m. this evening. Special thanks to Kim Villanueva, the new president for the National Organization for Women. All programs are archived on www.womenspaces.com. Also, I'm available for speaking engagements. And if you have any announcements you'd like to make, if you have a special event that's going on, if you're a nonprofit organization, and if you know somebody that has an anniversary or a birthday or a new birth, you know, like I said, I'm waiting for my third great-grandchild to be born, and that's going to be little James Richard and my beautiful granddaughter, Katie. She's really, really excited about that. So if you have, like I say, at the end of every show, remember, our children are the future. And we must never lose sight of that. This is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
The woman in your life, the woman in your life is you.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, September 15th, 2025.